This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Good God, that sucked.
Did you forget my name?
I did.
I've never seen you mess up before. We're keeping it in.
So great.
We're keeping it in.
Oh, you should. This is a blooper.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of The Bar. We're just going with this one. I am Ryan Leary. He is William Tinkup, and this is just a Sunday where we keep screwing up, so we're just going to go with it.
We should be just smoking weed, man.
Oh,
it would make
goodness.
Sense to, if we were smoking weed, it would make sense. Like, all this would make sense. You'd be like, hell, they're high. It's cool.
It is what it is. I'm sweating on video. I've got a shiny head on video. For those that are listening, they're just like, what the hell is going on? Anyhow, you're listening to The Barf, which is our take on the week that was, so you can prepare for the week that is. Thank you all for listening again. William, what's going on? How was your week? What do you got?
Week was, it blew by, and dealt with a little cold issue that I'm still kind of dealing with. But other than that, a lot of cool stories from this week. Can't wait to get into it.
Kick us off. What do you got first?
All right, let's see here. The what is key moments from Biden's 2024 State of the Union address. One.
Is that how we get to the next story? Done. I didn't watch his thing. I didn't even know it was happening. I totally forgot it was happening. I was at a swim board meeting, but I digress. Tell me. Top points.
So, 3 points that are work-related. Calling for paid leave. Two. Increase in federal minimum wage. Three, low barriers to labor organization. That's via NPR. So you can go look at that story yourself. There's a bunch of them, actually.
Yeah.
Things that were said, not said. My opinion, I think State of the Union addresses are dumb, especially in an election year, because it's just going to be this kind of the same old stuff. In this particular one, the HR items that I mentioned, they could have been pulled from any Democratic public address in the last 50 years. So, like, when you just full stop and go, hey, we need to raise the minimum wage. We need to do something about paid leave. And we need to do something with labor unions that support us. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have ripped this out of, 1992 or 1993 or whatever. Like, it literally, to me, and again, we're in election year, so I know it's polarizing and all that stuff. It's like State of the Unions are just boring. And they just don't say anything. And so I'm more keen to action, like stop talking and do something. But that being said, it is newsworthy that those things were mentioned. Now, will anything actually happen? No, of course not.
But probably not.
What's your bit with State of the Unions? When was the last time you watched one?
Last one, maybe?
Yeah. Oh, really? No.
You know what? I actually do look forward to them, and then
really?
I because I have good intentions. It's kind of like it's kind of like taking pre-workout before going to the gym. Like, fair. I take it with the intention I'm actually getting into the gym.
Yeah.
And I'm going. And then I sit in the car and I'm like,
yeah,
I'm getting kind of antsy here. I should go into the gym. I get to that point of watching the State of the Union and I just lose interest. And probably because of all the theatrics coming in, walking in, and then all the clapping and standing. And then you've got the, people making faces. It's just, I don't know.
He's a survivor of the Uvalde shooting.
Right.
There's
right,
Tammy. Yeah. Okay.
And they've never met. They can care less about it. But I get it. I understand the reason. But it's interesting you start off with that. And because I have one that I wanted to talk about, which is that overtime rules may be changing. Ooh. And so for those that follow this type of stuff, which I'm assuming if you're listening,
You do.
Chances are you do. The obviously we know the cost of living is just through the roof, crazy, right? The somebody said 200K is the new six figures. And I forget who said that, but someone said that and it stuck with me. I'm like, yeah, it kind of really is, right? Like you used to benchmark yourself by saying, I'm making six figures. That's not enough to live right now. That's no. For many people, that's not enough to live, especially with a family of three or four or five. It's yeah. just not going to cut it. So anyhow, the crux here is that the overtime rules, there's been legislation put through for overtime rules to change. And I'm going to read these numbers here so I don't mess it up. So last August, it was proposed that to raise the overtime eligibility threshold to $55,068 per year. That's up from $35,568. So from $35,000 to $55,000. And what that means is it's a big jump. That's a, yeah. It's a huge jump. So if you once made $33,000 or $35,000, you were eligible for overtime. Now you've got to be up. You've got to be up in that 50. Not many people are making that. And that's tied to the minimum wage because even at minimum wage, you're not going to be eligible for that.
Right.
So the question I have here is, will the employee earn more money? Right. So if these changes happen, will the employee earn more money or will the employer hire more people and cut the hours of the other people? Kind of like that threshold of full time. Are you working 40 hours or 38 hours?
I would lean towards the business always doing what's in the best interest of the business. So what costs less? Right. So if it costs less to pay someone time and a half or double time, than to hire and train and have another employee, then they'll do that. If it's ratchet back those hours to 40 hours or 39 hours or whatever, so they don't hit the threshold of overtime, then they'll do that. Okay. Businesses will always, it's like water displacing to the lowest point. Businesses will always do what's in the best interest of the business.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Overtime is no different.
Yeah, and time will tell. I'm interested to see where this goes. I don't know that that's going to happen or not. SHRM is involved, obviously. SHRM is advocating to the DOL to delay this until 2025.
Really?
But it's actually happening, and we'll see
where SHRM's not advocating for it to happen. SHRM's advocating for it to be postponed.
To delay the implementation.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
I wonder why that is. I wonder why SHRM would want that to be delayed. Like what does that say about SHRM? You know what I'm saying? Like they're the Society of Human Resource Professionals, so wouldn't they want that to happen sooner? I mean, if they're on the side of advocacy for the human resources professional, which means that they're the advocate for the employee. Mm-hmm. It seems like they would want that to happen, especially if you want to retain employees. I don't know. That's a weird one for me. Seems like it's counterintuitive, but maybe it makes sense to somebody. So if it does, please throw in the comments or shoot us an email because I would like to know kind of why that makes sense for SHRM to postpone. Let me throw a story at you. Oh, yeah, there's sound. Man, I love that sound. All right, here we go. Jamie Dimon, D-I-M-O-N, Dimon, Demain, Dimon. Anyhow.
That's why I didn't lead off with the story. I didn't know say his name.
Dimon. We'll go with that. Dimon. The CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, this is the what, wants to see teenagers landing 60K roles with schools measured on job occupancy rather than college admissions rates. So this was this comes out of Fortune. So the where is Fortune magazine, and so the irony is Dimon's a Harvard alumni. I don't hate this. I don't hate the take. Actually, is because not everyone should go to college. Not everyone should go to college right after high school. In fact, I didn't go to college right after high school. Mm-hmm. I did a 4-year stint working before I actually went to college.
Did you say 4 years?
Yeah, I took 4 years off.
Most people take a gap year.
No, I took a, there's a gap. Yeah, I took a, well, it was a real gap. It was a real gap. What people get in their degree, I did that as a gap, but I was working. So, it's like looking at it and saying, okay, master electricians, master plumbers, they're not going to get outsourced by robots soon. Will it happen in time? Yeah, probably. But is it soon? No. And again, kind of looking at it, like just looking at kids that I know about this age, just not all kids need to go to college. So I like his take. It's interesting that he has this hot take. And he's a Harvard alumni. But he's also saying, he puts his money where his mouth is. He actually, this is something he's been, when you look him up, he's been talking about this for a long time, like for a decade. And so it's not a Johnny come lately type of thing. He really cares about this and wants people to rethink college, which I think is a good take.
Who we were speaking with, someone, was it who were we talking to this week about education? I can't
Oh,
remember.
we were talking about that was more on
Student
the
loans,
yeah.
student loans and
That's
all
right.
of that. And it's the same idea. I mean, rethinking education is in a tough spot, right?
Right.
I'm certainly no expert here, but I do have three kids in the house. And I can tell you that they are not excited. Very different from
I
some of
know.
your kids, right? They're not excited about the prospect of college. They don't see the value in college. And they are almost taught, they're not taught, but it almost feels like they are taught that student debt is bad. And if you go to college, you're coming out with student debt. And there's a lot of bad painted around that,
Right.
which for good reason, right? We all lived through that. But yeah, I mean, like, it's not that they're just not interested in school. I think they have a real adverse feel to college. They don't
It's yeah.
want to be there right now.
It's
Yeah, it's interesting.
I don't know how universities are going to adapt to that. That's the we were talking to Will Seeley of Summer. The company's
Summer,
called Summer, and Summer provides student assistance, and they work with students through the enterprise to actually help them with all kinds of programs to reduce their student loan debt. So it's actually a cool. It's a cool play. It's going to be a use case podcast, so you can kind of look for it there to learn more. But that's, yeah, student loan debt. I didn't even think about it. When I went to college,
Just
like
went.
when I went, when I eventually went to college, I just signed documents like, oh, yeah, you got to sign this, got to sign that. I didn't look at the fine print. I didn't even look at the print. I just signed it. I'm like, eh, that's a, I'll deal with that later problem. So,
Get
which
your
again,
loans, go to school,
yeah.
and you'll be fine.
And you'll pay it back at one point. Like,
Yeah, at
like
one point you'll pay it back.
if you
And
believe
I
in
did.
if you believe in the Easter Bunny, you too should believe in student loan
Oh,
repayment.
God. All right.
Actually, there's a the guy that was Dave Chappelle's writer, partner on the Chappelle Show, Neil Brennan. He has a bit in Three Mics, his Netflix comedy special, where he basically says it's a small business loan. And as an 18-year-old that's going to go for 4 years and be blackout drunk, not go to class, not really learn anything, get a degree in English, you're a bad business.
Yeah, you're a bad business.
You don't deserve a loan. Like, it's a funny bit. So definitely go check out Neil Brennan's work.
All right. Next one I got here is automatic retirement. Curious to get your thoughts on this. So, House Democrats recently backed legislation to automatically enroll employees into retirement plans.
Oh,
Obviously, there's a lot driving that
we're not
with
starting at the top. My
financial
bad.
wellness, all that stuff, right? Like, there's
Yeah.
good reason retirement people are living a lot longer. The with obviously with technology and medicine and all of that stuff, people are living longer. They don't have enough to retire.
Right.
Got it. Understood, right? So here's what this legislation stipulates. Employers with more than 10 workers would be required to automatically enroll their employees into an IRA of some sort, whether it's traditional or Roth, or a similar plan such as a 401k. Employers with up to 100 employees will receive $500 annual tax credit for 3 years for setting up the automatic retirement account.
Right.
Employees can have the option to opt out of it if they want, but here's how it gets set up. Employees would contribute a minimum of 6% of their salary to their automatic account, whether it's the IRA, 401k, whatever it's going to be. And then it increases by 1%
each year. It's for savings.
It's for savings, yeah.
So that you have something when you retire.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of it's basically you're going to retire because we're going to set an age. But and in doing so, we're not just going to leave you hanging. We're going to force you to save.
Yeah. Not help, force.
Is it help?
Okay. I mean, look, we don't, at least I didn't have in high school or college. Here's how you save for my parents have
financial
help,
literacy in schools is you either
my
learned it from your parents
professed
but
not everybody has that
100%.
So if you look at professional athletes, they come from college, they get a $30 million contract and it's gone, right?
MC Hammer.
Yeah, there you go. We spoke about this, how they bring in wellness experts, financial people, and they put them through courses and classes and all of the above.
That was one of my first startups, was to be a financial planner for strippers, because they don't know what to do with their cash. No, seriously. Basically, I was going to take 15% and actually save it for them, so that when they get out of the life, you know, they have something to lean on, because you know, once you're in the life, you're spending all that money on coke and alcohol and all kinds of other stuff. So that's my first business idea.
I'm laughing because it's funny.
No, but it's literally, that was my first.
Because
I wrote a business case. I literally wrote a business plan. Literally, I'm serious. I was 20.
I feel like I need to hit the
19 years old. No, dude.
But I don't hate this play though. I don't hate the automatic retirement. I mean, obviously you have to let people opt out of it.
Yeah.
But I don't hate the idea of that. I mean, a lot of parents
retirement's for dead people.
Do it now.
Would you retire? It's a path to death. For me, I look at retirement, and I've seen it with multiple family members. They retire, and then speeds up their health issues, and they die. So it's like, you know what? The way that I look at retirement is, I'm just going to die in the fields. So, you know, at one point, if you can't get me on the phone, I'm dead.
You don't see him on the next barf.
There you go. Yeah,
he's gone. He's gone.
I live my life. All right, so March 8th, that was Friday, for those of you keeping track. It was celebrated as International Women's Day. And I found a wonderful article on Spiceworks, so spiceworks.com. And the article kind of gives actionable ideas to bridge the gap between men and women in tech. So click all the links. They have like links for programs and links for different things. But literally they interviewed probably 30 different women, and they basically said, how can we make this better? And so even though I don't necessarily like things like International Women's Day, because we should be celebrating women all the time. Okay, so I get kind of the argument, like, okay, this is the moment where you do kind of stop down and really make a big celebration out of it. This article was really, really giving great advice. So check it out, because it gives actionable. It's not just a feel-good article, a puff piece, if you will. It's actually giving some actionable advice for tech leaders to then kind of help with their recruiting and retention of women in tech. So
we'll put that link somewhere down below for people.
Or you can just go to spiceworks.com and search for it.
You could do that too. We need another sound for acquisition. What? Deal alerts. Deal. Literally another deal. Last week we just talked about
these guys.
Deal, yeah. So it was a higher score, right? No, not higher score. That was
No, they that was
Workday. Yeah.
That was the Zavvy.
Yeah.
Flurry.
I don't know why I was kind of thinking higher.
I know it had like two V's in it. I don't know. So yeah.
So okay. Yeah. So last week they announced the acquisition of Zavvy, which is an AI based people development company. Right. They've also acquired PayGroup, which is an APAC based payroll provider. This week they announced that they've acquired PaySpace, which is an African-based startup. They've got more than 14,000 customers are in 44 countries across Europe, LATAM, and Middle East, and of course, Africa. So this is an interesting play. So Deel is on a tear, right? They've got cash to burn. They're buying up the world. And so they're making a push to get into enterprise here. And they are spending a shit ton of money to get there, and that's fine. Companies, that's how they do it. So this is their largest acquisition to date. Their ultimate goal here, their four-year push, is to serve 100 countries with native payroll engines. Right. And so
this episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This is. I think we're going to see more of this, obviously, throughout the industry. Oh, yeah. We're going to see all the consolidation and all of this stuff, but there's a real play here. And Deel, we said last week, I like how they position it. It's a $12 billion startup.
Yep.
So I think we can remove the startup.
It's just in business label for 5 years. Point. Well, it also, in that same story, it says it crossed $500 million in ARR.
Right. Oh, so yeah.
Now you can do the math. If you're at home and you have a calculator, $12 billion. $5 million or $500 million in ARR. Mm-hmm. Now you know what their multiple on their on the $12 billion is. So you can kind of do the math to come to that. First of all, it's for contractors. It's for remote employees. It helps people get paid that are in different places. Yeah. So if you've got an employee in Zimbabwe or whatever, then and they need to be paid. You've got Rippling, you've got Deel, you've got a number of different ways that you could do global payroll, but they also do other types of HR services. So I like it. And, let's see what they do next week.
What they do next week. Motion to remove the label startup.
Startup. No, I'm sorry. You can't.
It's gone. No more startup.
I'm going to go back to news for just one thing. I heard it on the radio. But then I researched it, and it's Dartmouth players detail how they put a plan together to unionize. So this is a basketball team. And this is a New York Times article, so you go to New York Times and put in Dartmouth unionize, and you'll find the article. But it's a really, really interesting thing. These are college athletes. And let's just say this is the basketball program at Dartmouth. And their last game was against Harvard, so let's not feel sorry for either one of them. Anywho, so, what happens if they do unionize? And where does that go from there? So you got NIL, which is name, image, and likeness. You've got a transfer portal, right? And then you've got unionization. What that all leads to is that collegiate amateur sports will be no longer. They'll actually be paid. They'll be employees. I mean, they should be employees. So first of all, if it kind of sounds like I'm a hater, I'm not a hater at all. They've always been employees. But it's like that joke of the teams with T-shirts. You're voting. You're rooting for teams with a certain T-shirts against people with other T-shirts, because the players are going to come and go so fast that you won't be able to keep track of. Yeah. So it's just going to be like looking at amateur sports in a different way.
Yeah.
Now, if that happens, if Dartmouth is successful, which I would assume that they are, then where does that happen? Where does it happen? How do they unionize and create different deals? Like for all of the basketball programs they have their own collective bargaining agreement. For all the football teams, they have their own collective agreement. Like, you can see this playing out. Yeah. Now, it helps two things. If you're a sport, if a collegiate sport, you make money. Let's say football.
Mm-hmm.
Football makes money.
A lot of money for college.
Lacrosse, sorry to say, not so much. So now what do you deal with the inequity and like Title IX issues where you have some women's sports where they don't make any money? But because you make so much money in football, it's easy to pay for a lot of those things. And rightfully so. So the unionization thing comes at a really interesting time where, okay, what are we going to do and make things fair and equitable?
Yeah.
And the second thing is, how soon does this come to high school sports? How soon does this actually come
to high school?
I don't know. 18-year-olds, they're adults. I mean, again, if they're minors, I get it. But the moment you turn 18, and most boys are held back, so they're older in high school than girls, which is a different issue that we can tackle at a different time. But if you're 18, you're an adult. You can serve in the Army. You can vote. So if you can vote, you can unionize, in theory.
In theory, yeah.
So in theory.
I don't hate this at all for a collegiate level. I think I follow this a lot, and
right.
especially with the NIL and the amount of money these kids are making now is just ridiculous. But they're making a ton of money for the universities. Like, it's it's fair for them to get paid. I would like to see, and I would like to see former collegiate athletes, especially those that didn't make it to the pro level.
Right.
Be compensated at some level, somehow. I don't know that you can, but
right.
it would be nice. But high school, I think that's, you know, maybe a little more.
We take a story of people that just went to the pros too soon. So let's take Johnny Manziel as an example. He wins the Heisman Trophy, right? Johnny Football. They would have put a statue out in front of Kyle Field for him. Mm-hmm. If he would have been able to make money off of NIL in college, he probably would have stayed at A&M for 4 years.
Right.
Before going into the pros, which would have helped his development.
Sure.
You know, by the time he got to Cleveland, he would have actually maybe not.
Maybe, probably not, because he still had the partying issue.
Yeah. Well, that he could have blown all of his money on that as well. I mean, but it's just like you look at those stories, it's like, what?
Yeah.
If they didn't rush to go to the pros, what if?
Yeah, right. Would the development happen? Would they have changed?
So keep an eye on that. That one's, you can find it anywhere, but the New York Times is where I found it.
All right. So, story time. I remember just a few years ago when we were at HR Tech and we look up at the big rafters and the banners and all the, you know, big banners hanging down over at the expo hall. And it just felt like an overwhelming amount of learning and coaching companies that were just, they were there in force. It was kind of a bit uncomfortable for me because at that time I was still talking with recruiting companies and cool recruiting tech, which was like the 10 companies at HR Tech that would actually fall into my category.
Right.
But now, I mean, look, it has exploded with the power of AI and all that stuff. It's exploded, right? So anyhow, you say this all the time. A lot of people say this. PowerPoint makes you stupid, right? So this is the time. If you haven't, just company alert, smart alert. If you haven't at this time already have taken notice, training is very different, right? So if you're serious about building a skilled workforce, it's time to change the way you're training, right? So I had said training's no longer done in a room with PowerPoint and a laser pointer. Like, it's very, very different. So anyhow, I say all of that because we've had a couple of conversations in the past couple of weeks with companies that are doing this, and I came across a small study on ChatGPT, the Gen Z career coach. You may have seen it. So I was going to ask you to guess a number, but last time I asked you to guess a number,
I guess.
Got it. So I'm not going to ask you because my joke won't work if I do that. So I'm just going to keep talking. Nearly half of Gen Z workers, so 50% of Gen Z workers surveyed say they get better career advice from ChatGPT than their managers.
100%.
That's insane. Now, I agree with that. I actually agree with that because of the conversations that we've had. So we know that employee satisfaction and loyalty is tied to support and how you're investing in your employee is not always tied to salaries and all of that type of stuff. You got to read this, the article. They put some really good numbers in there. This is some people are going to roll their eyes. It was on CNBC. I'll say that quietly, but it's good. It's a good article. I know a lot of people don't like CNBC, but good article. You need to read it. Check it out. But curious to get your thought here because I know you like the learning space a whole lot.
I used ChatGPT. I did a merit badge college last Saturday, and I was teaching Indian lore, which I have a master's in. So you know, I could have teached it with my eyes closed. But normally, I would have thrown up a PowerPoint deck. There's two brothers. They're 12 and 11 years old. And I said, you know what? I sat down with them at a table and I just said, listen, I want to do this different. And I want to use YouTube and ChatGPT because that's the tools. That's the things that y'all are accustomed to. So we're going to go through your worksheet, the workbooks for Indian Lore Merit Badge. We're going to do it differently. And I literally... And what's funny is Lucas, one of the kids, turns to me. I said, we're not going to use PowerPoint. We're not going to use Google. And he says, yeah, Google's for boomers. Which a little part of me died at that particular
Google's
moment. But I was
for
like,
boomers.
Google's for boomers.
That is our t-shirt. Google
that's harsh,
for
dude.
Boomers.
I said, Lucas, I'm gonna steal that, brother. I got that. Thank you. Appreciate that. But we went through the what are the ten cities that are Indian names, what are the tribes, mm-hmm. and what are the meanings of the word? You know, like that's the easy stuff for ChatGPT.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like they got into it and I could contextualize things for them when we got the results from ChatGPT. Like I could give them stories about things.
Yeah.
And they enjoyed it. Like it was an interactive, like it's like how they like to learn. So, and they're how they're accustomed to learning. So I think that's the way I'll teach merit badges going forward. Unless it's real tactile. I think I'll do more ChatGPT and more YouTube, more shorts, just something more TikTok, something that kind of stays with the attention span. Why not?
I
love it.
Why not? Yeah.
All right. So let me go through. We did one acquisition. Let me do another one that I thought was interesting. It's Accenture acquires Udacity, which I always get confused with the word.
I did not see that one.
Udacity to build a learning platform focused on AI. So this comes out of TechCrunch. And so you can just Google Accenture and Udacity. And so they clarified that what they want to do is they want to train their own employees. So they bought this company. It's a learning tech. And they want to speed up their learning for AI for themselves, for the employees, but also for their clients. And so what became interesting to me is consulting firms buying learning technology to speed up their learning about AI. And, why would they buy this and not rent it? Like Udacity was out there on the market. Why just get a license? Why not just get a license and, or maybe a strategic partnership? Why buy it outright? I'm not completely clear why they bought it outright other than to build their own large language model or combine it with other large language models and speed up their own model, their Accenture model. So, I think it's fascinating because you don't see Accenture buying a lot of tech. You see them buying other services companies, things that are peripheral.
Right.
So this is actually, you might see them build their own Gen AI platform for their clients. We might not ever see it because it might be the secret sauce that
For their clients. Yeah.
Right. But so there you go. Accenture acquires Udacity. Which is always confusing because I always say Audacity.
Audacity.
Yeah.
Not to be Udacity. Confused with Audacity.
Udacity.
Or not Odyssey.
Meudacity.
So, all right. I absolutely, I'm playing favoritism here because is my story. I found
as you should.
But I like this one. I really do like this. And this is, I think, the center of the debate for a lot of people that are saying AI is coming for my job. All of this stuff. This is a story that actually says, hell yeah, it's coming for your job, right? Yeah. So Klarna, which is a payment processing company for e-com companies, has an AI assistant that they deployed 1 month ago. This is really interesting to me. So their Gen AI assistant is handling customer service things, right? So refunds, returns, payment process or payment related issues, cancellations, disputes, all of that stuff is what this bot is handling. Now they released this for a month. They used it for a month and they put it right into their employee population. Okay. So this is the results, because this is just absurd. What I think it's absurd. I read a lot about this and I was watching some stuff on it, which is really interesting. So it handled 2.3 million conversations in 1 month. That's 2/3 of the total customer service chats that came in for that month. That the AI assistant did the job of 700 full-time agents.
Wow.
In 1 month. That is a ridiculous number. Now, here's where it gets interesting. One might say, well, I use bots all the time. I use chatbots and they suck. I don't want to click here. I don't want to do this. I just want to talk to a human. Okay, I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. All I do is type in agent, 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 agent until it gets me an agent. And then I watch the damn thing type and they ask me the same question. And it's an actual person asking me the question that I just answered. Previously, at some point, and probably now, I'm going to actually start communicating with these bots. Check this out. So side by side with the human agents, the assistant was on par with a human agent in regards to customer SAT scores. It outperformed in resolution disputes. There was a 25% drop in repeat inquiries on the bot versus the humans.
Oh, interesting.
That's a huge drop. Here's what's really getting me interested in actually just communicating with the bot next time. An average of 2 minutes to resolve your issue versus 11 minutes with a human.
Well, that's how you're gonna get people to use bots.
That's how you're gonna get people now. Clearly the argument, okay, now you're taking 700 full-time agents and all. I get that, right? But I think these are some pretty astounding numbers, and I think this is going to be the use case for a lot of companies moving forward.
Yeah, we're going to see a trend in that, because we got a couple stories that are all tied together here. So let me go into this nursery story. The what C-suite executives believe AI is key to increased productivity, yet most workforces are not ready to transform, according to Mercer's 2024 Global Trends Global Talent Survey. So you can go to mercer.com and find that. What's fascinating to me, and what this kind of pulled out of me, is like, okay, the why. Who's going to train the workforces to get ready? Is it going to be peers? Is it going to be kind of a training? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be consultants? Or is it going to be AI co-pilots? So if the C-suite believes that AI leads to productivity, this is a hack. Mm-hmm. Add AI, and you just gave a great story of a great hack. Okay. And the same is true if workforces aren't ready to transform. I mean, to some degree, you could ask the question, do they need to transform, or are they just going to be obsolete? That FOBO, fear of being obsolete, right? So What it drove me to think about was, how are they going to be trained in order to transform? So what is the new normal? Okay, well, somebody's got to set the table for what is the new normal, and someone's got to train them.
Yeah.
And the someone it might not be a someone. It might be just AI is training them how to interact with AI.
Yeah.
The transformation of AI. So, anyhow, Mercer, great study. Always puts out great research. Check them out.
Love it. All right. So, I want to do a thing here, and I have to find my thing to do the thing. However, where is it?
It's hard for me not to laugh at this.
This is me trying to be slick and not look off the camera.
Do you want me to tell a story?
No. I only have two of them because I poorly prepared for this.
There's no judgment.
That's okay.
You're in a judgment-free zone.
I wanted to put you on the spot and get your hot takes for 30-second analysis on topics, but I only have two because I got distracted. So this week, we're going to test it. It'll be a pilot.
What do you think about ADA?
It'll be an unpaid paid pilot for you. Hot takes, okay? 30-second analysis. When you hear whoosh, you gotta stop talking. Okay. We're only going to do it once. And next week I'll have a bunch. So, how much is too much? Elon Musk pay package was denied at $56 billion.
First of all, executive compensation's out of control. Always has been. And always will be until they're put in check.
That's not 30 seconds. I wasn't ready to switch. Hold on.
You said or less. I focused on the or less.
This is a Sunday, I'll tell you. All right. So we've heard of the 4-day work week, right? So our friend Jamie over overseas there, he started this. So he didn't start it, but he did this, right? A 4-day work week. There was an article, which is what I thought you were going to talk about earlier, on a 3-day work week. And I'm not going to share the details of it and all of that. Sure. We can get into that later. But your take on a 3-day work week.
Yeah, it's stupid. So what happens is you just cram 50 hours worth of work into 3 or 4 days. As Americans, we're taught to work hard. We work hard. And it's like a vacation. The week before vacation, you put in 80 hours. That's why most people, when they go on vacation, they get colds. Because they've worked themselves into a low immune system. So 3-day work week, 4-day work week, yeah, it's all dumb. Just work when you need to work and don't work when you don't need to work. Like be an adult.
I could see the 4-day. Like you can put that into a 4-day work week. I don't think you need, you know, all that. But three days. Now there's a philosophy behind it and all that. But that's all I have for the hot takes.
What if I told you 7-day work week? You can, but you only need to work 3 or 4 hours a day.
Now,
think about it. Think about it with the hobbies that you have, the hobbies that I have. And it's just said, you know what? 3 hours. Put it in whenever you want to. Doesn't matter. Let's just make it 3. Make it simple.
I could do that. I could do that. Do I get to choose? Well, let me ask some questions first. Do I get to choose my hours?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Outcomes
based.
Totally do that. I could do that. Because I think most people do that anyway. If you're in a corporate job, you're doing that anyway. If you're not actually physically doing the work on a Sunday, you're thinking about it, right?
100%.
You're out on a Saturday night and you're doing something and somebody says something. You're like, oh, shit, I gotta go do this.
I need to make sure I write that down, or I need to make sure I record
might as well
that. Monday.
Get the benefits for it. So
Go fishing.
Yeah.
Go fishing.
Yeah,
just
I
go
can
have
do
fun.
That from 12 to 6 every day and work from
to a certain degree.
8 to 11.
Work needs to fit around fishing. Or whatever your hobby is. It doesn't have to be fishing, but whatever your hobby is, work needs to fit around it.
Yeah.
So let me run through a couple of these things.
Yeah, because that's all the hot takes that I have.
I got you. So HCM 2024 outlook, look ahead to more robust M&A activity. Shocking. You know, we've been talking about a lot about M&A over the last couple of weeks. So when you want to dig into this, you always go and look at investment banks, and you look at their reports. And what was the report from last week or last month? Usually they're a quarter trailing. And 2023 was horrible with M&A. but you know they're bullish, extremely bullish on looking at what's going to happen with, and you know what, in the barfs that we've had so far, a lot of acquisitions, a lot of funding.
Yeah,
seems fair. But the main thing I wanted to make sure the audience understands is just follow the money. Go and look at investment banks reports. This was from Harborview Advisors. So you can go to their website and sign up for their newsletter, and they'll give you insight into where they think the market is doing and where they see the money being invested and the acquisitions. And again, you can kind of follow that, and it's fun. It doesn't have to be a beating. It's actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
So second story, bad news for Basis. So this was actually, I found this on musicradar.com, and Sony researchers have created an AI baseline generator that responds to the style and tonality of the music you feed it. So you feed it the music that you like, it creates the baseline based on the music that you feed it. So, of course, it's not a work story per se, but it did get me to think about, well, do we care? If the baseline is really great, which is something you've told me before, well, do we care if the resume fits, if it was AI generated or not, do we care? And so it got me to think about that, like, okay, wait a minute, this is something that comes from AI because you fed it something.
Right.
And it's just great. I don't know if I care. I mean, I love Bootsy Collins and Flea as bassists, but I'm not sure I care that it's AI driven. So anyhow, it's a fantastic article.
I want to have to go take a look at that one. That actually is pretty interesting.
MusicRadar.com. Yeah. AI researchers. So if they did it with bassists, you know what's going to happen next. Percussion.
Yeah.
They're going to go all the way around.
That's interesting. So I got one here. I want to run by you. So
bring it.
This is about vacation days.
Ooh.
Okay, vacation days. So news at 11. United States does not get a lot of vacation days.
Shocking. Spoiler alert.
However.
Shocking.
However. Okay. So I found an article, went down vacation days. And which countries are the top 10 countries, the top lowest, or the top lowest, the 10 lowest. You know, you get what I'm trying to say.
I got you.
Long day. Okay.
Philly.
So I'm going to give you some guesses here. Country, the number one country. Well, fuck it. I'll just say, give me a country that you think's in the top 10 for number
Australia.
Of total holidays.
Australia.
No.
What? Nope. Anything with the British Empire. So anywhere where the British Empire landed. So the UK.
Now you're going to get me in trouble for saying the wrong things. I don't think so. So bad.
Okay, so
all right, let me just give you the number. So
fair enough. Go ahead.
The number one country has 53 total days, 26 paid vacation days,
okay,
and 27 public holidays. 53 compared to the United States has 10 paid holidays, and there's
Two
no
weeks.
Guarantee of paid vacation days.
Sorry. All right.
Iran is number one.
Oh,
26 paid vacation days, 27 holidays. Then you've got San Marino, Yemen, Andorra, Madagascar. Like
Bahrain.
Yeah, now the lowest, you've got the U.S. is number two. Micronesia, it's like insane, right? We're like Taiwan, the Philippines, Nigeria, like these are the countries that we're competing with to be the worst of the worst in taking care of our employees. And I saw this and I thought you'd get a kick out of it. But
you know what I'd like to see that data juxtaposed against is the economies or GDP.
That'd be a good idea. Mm-hmm.
Like I'd like to know, like is there anything in the data that says more vacation days equals more productivity or more a better economy, let's say, or more happiness.
Yeah.
Like
probably
it,
happiness.
We would, well, you'd think, but like, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Again, if you're stimulated by the work that you do, vacation is you know, people that love vacation days or people that love or hate Mondays, they hate their job.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, I can see it both ways, but yeah, in general, yeah. I would say so. But
all right,
I still think I take your 7 days a week for 3 hours a day.
Yeah, see? And then you can fish every day.
Done. I'm all for it.
All right. Red Thread, which is a research firm that Ryan and I absolutely love, they just put out a study. They uncovers a stark decline in trust and performance management practices amid reduced support for employee development. So the best quote from the report, I mean, there's a bunch of them. They do such a wonderful job. Companies are chipping away at employee trust for no discernible gain.
Like, mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're just basically taking away their trust. So what I want to see in that study and what I want to see after that study is, how do you reconcile that with our return to office?
Right. Right.
So again, a decline in trust and performance management practice, and we're not developing employees enough. So
yeah.
Shout out to Red Thread for the research. Great stuff. Go to their website and you can find the latest research report. It's free.
So I'm going to piggyback off of that because I have one that's kind of right up the alley. So Glassdoor released its Employee Confidence Index.
Oh, yeah.
Shocker, shocker. Employee confidence is at its lowest since 2016, and less than 50% are optimistic about their employer's future.
Yeah.
And they don't like their leadership. They don't trust their companies.
Not shocking.
Not 44% specifically, according to the index, of employees do not trust their leadership. But last spring, that number was 35%.
Wow.
So it's getting worse.
Yes.
It's getting worse and worse and worse. So anyhow, that was a Glassdoor employee confidence. Obviously, there's a whole lot more information there. But go check it out. We'll drop the link down there. It's just go to Glassdoor. You'll find it.
All right. I got some funding things. You want to step into some funding?
Run through them. I know you got a bunch. So run through all the funding.
Okay. So Argyle, $30 million fundraise. And Argyle does income and employment verification. So what I like about this funding is verification, verification, verification. Gen AI, in my opinion, will create a bunch of distrust about everything you see and read and hear and feel and smell, whatever. Mm-hmm. And this company is in the business of verification. I think it's just great timing on Argyle's point. It's, you know, because they're going to come in and they're going to actually verify the stuff so that you know what you're getting in terms of income and employment verification. So that's a cool thing. You can just go to their website. It's argyle.com, and it's in the blog. It's a note from the CEO on the funding and what they're doing with it, stuff like that. So these next two deals are kind of similar, and they're in a similar space. So Remo First. So it's just, I would assume that's remote, but Remo First takes on $25 million to take on Deal and Rippling in the HR tech, the global HR tech space. So they help hire employees and contract in more than 180 countries on behalf of the companies so that they don't have to set up local entities. They're more affordable than Deal or Rippling, which code sounds like a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
So if you're in a price war, okay. So Remo First.
Look, if they were any good, Deal would have picked them up last week. So I'm discounting them.
And they might next week. The next one is Remote Pass, which is a UAE-based, making remote work easier. Talent shortage in the Middle East is real, by the way. Absolutely real. So I'm assuming, because this is just a Series A, and it's 5.5, I'm assuming because they're focused on the UAE, the Middle East, I'm assuming that somebody's going to acquire them. But again, kind of a theme from when we saw Deal acquire Mm-hmm. Yeah, last week, this week, and now you've got two companies in the same space taking on funding.
Right.
There's, you know how it plays out. It's like the big fish are going to get bigger. They're going to just swallow some of these other fish. But again, it's even kind of hard to keep up with the names. Remo First, Remote Pass. Okay. Sounds a little similar. Mm-hmm. And they're doing things that are similar. Of course, they would tell you that they're doing things that are different and they're focused on different markets and all that other stuff, as they should. But the last one I have is the one that I find the most interesting. So I buried the lead. So this is a San Francisco startup. It just came out of stealth mode, which is a phrase that I absolutely disdain.
Best kept secret.
So yeah, thanks. So it's a startup called EMA, E-M-A, secures $25 million in AI tech. Now I want to read you three things that they do and why this is terrifying. I mean, exciting. One is, it's designated to replicate the capabilities of a human employee. The solution can perform such tasks as engaging in conversation, comprehending context, taking continuous human feedback, reasoning, decision-making, and collaborating with human employees on difficult projects. That's one. Two, mission is to transform enterprise and to help every employee work faster with simple-to-activate and accurate AI employees. Three, EMA Fusion TM, which exceeds 2 trillion parameters, combines over 30 public large language models, including ChatGPT-4, 3.5 Turbo, Claude 2.1, Gemini, Mistral, and Llama 2. So if we mentioned at the last end of the store last time, at FOBO, fear of being obsolete. This startup.
This is it. This is it,
people. Yeah. Right. EMA. And I found that actually on DevX. DevX is a great source, by the way, if you ever wanted to find stories about this.
A couple weeks back, we talked about Nuo. N-W-O. Similar, sounds like, almost, right? Like the digital employee that's going
to
have.
They're going to run right next to you. Yeah. They're going to make you faster. So at one point, humans can only go so fast.
Like
you can only go so fast as a human being. That's it. You tap out. So at what point do they start taking over the things that you're just too slow at? So it's fascinating. Again, they just came out of startup stealth mode, $25 million, and DevX, devx.com, and you can go look at kind of all the things they're doing. But I wanted to read those things so that people kind of get the bit that They're co-pilot, but at one point in some ways, they're going to become pilots.
Right.
So we're training the co-pilot, and the more we train the co-pilot, the more the co-pilot is like, well, do we need a pilot? Probably not.
Hey, look, as long as they can land the plane without a wheel when it falls off, I'll take the pilot anytime. All right,
Sully.
I've got another one, and I wanted to, before we forgot this one, I wanted to bring it up and get your thought, because you'll have some thoughts here. So racist behavior is shunning, but not severe enough. So this is a story that I found. where did I find this thing? I found this on HR Dive. So I found this on HR Dive. This is a story about a maintenance worker, and I'm probably going to mispronounce the company, Flowers, F-L-U-O-R. No, F-L-U-O-R, yeah. Flower Facility and Plant Services. He's the only black member of his night shift crew.
Okay. Right.
And what they're saying is that he did not provide sufficient evidence to support claims of a hostile work environment and retaliation. So.
Right.
My initial thought was, do I even need to bring this up, and do we need to spend time explaining this? And I thought, are we in a time now where we even need to discuss this? But I dug deeper. I thought, let's not be lazy about this. Let's dig deeper. Look, I'm no lawyer, right? So I'll throw all that stuff out. This is just on top. It felt dirty.
Right.
After reading and watching some of the analysis on both sides, I understand there's a legal side to this, right. But then there's the human side to this as well, right? So spoiler alert, they lost their case. The employee lost the case because they failed to prove his case according to the requirements of what is harassment and what is racism and all of that. There was another case like this in 2020. It was a woman who had a disability. It was a case relating to her disability, noting that her supervisor made derogatory statements about her. They said she was a problem child, that she's a troublemaker, and that they assigned her to longer shifts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This also didn't rise to the level of being hostile in the work environment. So there's precedence here. My thought is just care more and do better. But I want to let you comment on this because there is legal precedence on why this hasn't raised to the level of a hostile work environment, even though they were talking to this person in derogatory ways and or talking behind her back in a racist manner.
Well, when you have to prove something, you know, you and I've watched enough cop shows and to know it's not what you know or what you think or what you feel. It's what can you prove?
Yeah.
So now you deal with two things when you're dealing with the burden of proof. Okay. Is the threshold of proof too high?
Right.
So when we say hostile work environment, okay, and we have to prove things, okay, is that threshold too high? Or are we too sensitive? And it doesn't have to be, it's not binary. Both can be true and be true at the same time.
Yeah.
So we could be too sensitive and the threshold could be too high. But I think your advice on just be nice.
Just care more. Do better.
Yeah. It's I tell people this all the time. It's a lesson of the movie Roadhouse.
Mm.
Be nice.
Yeah. Be like nice. So I'll read the three-line judgment. The judge on the case relied on the U.S. Supreme Court guidance that a hostile work environment should be judged based on the frequency and severity of discriminatory conduct, whether it is physically threatening or humiliating, or by contrast, a mere offensive utterance, and whether it unreasonably interferes with an employee's performance.
It seems like all of those words are very subjective.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like what is something that's, you know, humiliating to you might not be humiliating to me.
Exactly.
Now, how do we define that? Like all those phrases are subjective.
Yeah.
Which again, I think again, when you're dealing with the law, none of that should be subjective.
Right.
Like that's like a speed limit. If we did look at like traffic violations. If you're going over 65 miles an hour and it's posted, it's pretty black and white.
Yeah.
But someone's the velocity or the amount of times that they use something that's derogatory, like, well, okay, how many times?
Right.
More than two?
Right.
More than two in 5 minutes? More than two in 10 years? Like what?
Yeah.
Who's setting the guardrails? And I think the subjectivity of that makes it hard for people to prove.
Right. Well, it does. And I think for me, the bigger take here was, where's the employer in all of this, right? What does their handbook say? And what kind of environment do they foster to allow this? And I don't know if they were reprimanded or what the consequences were. I was unable to find it. I clearly suck at research. So if you find it, let me know.
Did you notice the one bit about if it impacts productivity? So let me see if I get this straight.
If you get harassed enough that you can't work,
use the reverse. I'm going to use the N word until it impacts your productivity, and then it's bad.
Yeah, then it's yeah.
Are you kidding me? That's horrible.
It was just one of the. It was. I saw it. I read it, and then I went. I was like, nah. I was like,
no,
wait
that's,
a minute.
That's let me definitely go back worth and talking about.
Read that again. Anyhow, this has been a wonderful. I'm barf, man. Yeah, it's a wonderful Sunday. I'm drinking my warm cup of coffee. Isn't that cute?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, this specific mug, if you put it in the microwave, gets extremely hot. I don't know if it's the stuff on there, but yeah. Burns my little lip.
Oh, sorry to hear
that. Anyhow, no, if for whatever reason you're still watching, listening, love us everywhere, like us, subscribe for sure. You can find us on all your podcast channels, of course, here on YouTube and all the socials. Arf. You see us anywhere. Podcasting live in an event. Come say hi to us. See you next time.